Okay, this is Gary Parrish again from CBSSports.com again, and it's now Tuesday, April 29th, otherwise known as 2 days after the NBA draft deadline for underclassmen, and 1 day after the final power conference job was filled, at least for now, with Missouri hiring Kim Anderson. So this seems like as good a time as any to revisit with Matt Norlander and Jeff Borzello and talk issues in college basketball that have been going on since we returned home from the Final Four. Borzello, Norlander, how are you?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I missed you guys.
Well, I missed you plenty, Borzello and GP. But Parrish, you actually sound like you're in conference tournament form right now. What's going on with the voice?
You know what? I really don't know. Like I went back to a radio yesterday and I had a lot of people say, "So what's going on with your voice?" And they were like, "Ooh, hard weekend," because that's what people always assume, right? Like, "Ooh, you must have got after it this weekend," and I really didn't. Kelly went to Nashville to run in the Rock and Roll Half Marathon with Bill Belichick and like thousands of other people. And so I was in charge of the boys for the entire weekend. I don't want to get the line. My sister-in-law helped with the four-month-old a lot because A, Kelly doesn't trust me with the four-month-old, and B, we were out of town a lot for a soccer tournament my 11-year-old had, and then I had the Grizzlies playoff game on Saturday night. But I think just actually full-time taking care of children for a weekend, like, totally ripped away my health.
My wife doesn't trust me with my four-month-old child. You basically just said that.
No, I believe it's 100% true. Like,
yeah, I don't think I would trust you with a four-month-old either.
Yeah, not because I'm going to, lose him or something, just because, like, he's very needy. Like, and honestly, in the weekend of the draft deadline and Missouri presumably hiring a coach at any time, and Grizzlies playoff game, and with my son's soccer tournament, which happened to be in Oxford, Mississippi, out of town, there's just so much going on. She was like, there's no way you're going to be able to do all of that and handle Oliver as well. And so our relative stepped in. But by Sunday night, I was just completely worn down, and I woke up, and I sound like somebody who had a really hard weekend, but really, I just had like a normal father-type weekend.
Are you and family and friends okay down there, though? Because there was obviously swaths
in
the south. Did you get hit at all or what?
Well, it's been bad weather here, but nothing like what you've seen on CNN and other places. I mean, Tupelo, honestly, is about, 45 minutes from me. And it was obviously ravaged in a pretty serious way. Tuscaloosa was obviously hit. A lot of Alabama, that's a few hours away. But, where I'm at, we had some wind blow down umbrellas on the patio. You know, it's not anything to be concerned about. But, yeah, you see what's going on, whether it's in Oklahoma or Arkansas or parts of Mississippi and Alabama. Like, we're fortunate to get bypassed. And it's just those things are so dangerous, the tornadoes, like, for obvious reasons, right? But they're also, like, they just come out of nowhere and then it's over. And right. The truth is, where I live, we forever had tornado warnings, like all of the time. It's like, all right, another tornado warning. And you almost like, oh God, whatever. Like, you don't even care. You don't even blink because, you know, I've literally been in, I would say, hundreds of tornado warnings in my life and like watched them on television. And yet, that might be overstating it, but whatever. The point's the same. A whole bunch. And yet, never actually seen a tornado. Never actually had my home or school or anywhere where I lived damaged by a tornado. And yet, I imagine that's the same thought everybody has up until, you know, your house is ripped into half, like, right. Tragically. And so, it's just it's a scary deal that I don't know if it's because I've gotten older or because I have children, but you do take those things a little more seriously now. Like, if nothing else, you yell at your 11-year-old, come downstairs, get in the bathroom. We're not gonna just assume that we'll be okay, even though we've been okay forever. Because I woke up this morning and there's a story about an athlete at the University of Alabama, a swimmer, dead, and he was like living his life as normally as he could have yesterday. And then somebody said, there's a tornado warning, take shelter. And whether he did or not, I have no idea, but now he's not alive. And that's a scary, scary deal.
Yeah, actually, when I was your son, your youngest son, Oliver's age, like 4 months old, I have obviously no memory of this, but I was born in Denver, and both of my parents were at work. And my uncle, who actually still lives out there, was watching me. But very rare for tornadoes to hit that area, obviously, because of the elevation. But there were tornadoes sometime in, like, August of 81 or something. And tornado came down, actually hit a house that I my parents say was diagonal to us, but my uncle actually took me and covered me in the bathtub in the bathroom, and thankfully. Huh. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's one of those crazy things. Like, I could very well not be here if the tornado had hit, you know, 60 feet closer or had hit the house. So that's the only tornado that I've actually ever been a part of. But yeah, they're totally scary. I've got friends in the South, and that's kind of the nature of them is you, as you said, GP, is you kind of expect them because they happen with regularity to a certain degree. But even still, to me, they're the most, they're the scariest thing. Like, they're scarier than hurricanes because...
Hurricanes, you can sort of project where it's going to go.
Yeah, right? Exactly, and there's like a buildup. But with the tornado, it just plops there, down out of the sky, and it's, you know, 160 mile an hour winds, and it might last a minute, it might last 10 minutes, but you just can't predict the path of it, and that's what makes it so terrifying.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like with a hurricane, at least, and not to, you know, discount one against the other, but like with a hurricane, and maybe this wasn't the way people thought before Katrina. I think. There were a lot of people who just said, oh, it's a hurricane, we'll be fine. You know, people sort of take that approach. Like, well, oh, we'll be fine. Like, even people in New Orleans assume that. And but since that very high-profile tragedy, I think people do take hurricanes far more seriously than they might have otherwise across the board. Beyond that, like you said, somebody says, hey, a hurricane is coming, take shelter. You know that, A, it's coming, and B, it's going to hit you. Whereas with a tornado... They can say there's a tornado warning, which means it's been spotted. Then they can say there's a tornado on the ground, and there's still a chance that it won't hit you. Like, it might hit a mile away from you, but it's not going to hit you. It just sort of takes whatever path it takes. And so it's a little bit like a roulette wheel. Like, you know the wheel's spinning, and you know the ball's going to land somewhere, but odds are it's not going to be you. And so it sort of makes it hard to get all worked up about it. At least it has for me, given that, you know, I've been alive 37 years and never actually been affected directly personally by a tornado, even though they've been all around me practically my whole life. And yet, if you happen to be, to borrow from the analogy again, the unlucky spot where the ball lands on this roulette wheel, sometimes it doesn't matter whether you took shelter or not. Like, there's stories about when the football player at Alabama was killed in a, or his girlfriend or both, was killed in a tornado a few years ago. Like, they did what you're supposed to do, you know, get in a closet, get in the bathroom, take shelter. And then when a tornado of that magnitude just rips through your house, it just rips through your house. There's not, like, you know, there was a story a few years ago, I think this might have been Oklahoma or Alabama, and I apologize if they all blend together. I wish they didn't, but they're so common that they actually do for most people. A dad riding in a car with his son, and his son was sucked out of the sunroof.
Like, really? Can you
imagine? Like, you're riding down with your son, and next thing you know, he's ripped through the sunroof and gone forever. Like, you know, they found this body a couple days later, and he was as you would expect. And it's just that, to me, that's the scariest thing, is that even when it's coming and you know it's coming, you still also sort of know that there's a good percentage chance that it's not going to hit you. And yet, if it does, there's nothing you can do about it. At least with a hurricane, they say a hurricane's coming, you can get out of there and be fine. But with a tornado, your instincts are, we'll be fine. And yet, if you're not fine, you are not fine at all.
Yeah, so it's great to talk to you, man.
So it's wonderful to talk college basketball again.
God.
I don't even know. You're the one that asked. How
don't ever ask Parrish about the weather again.
So, I mean, what do we want to talk?
Well, here's what I want to talk about first. So the draft deadline is expired, and all the coaching searches are filled. And what we found out, I guess it was last Friday, was that Andrew and Aaron Harrison are going to return to Kentucky. That means that heading into the offseason, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I think most reasonable people would say that there were 8 legitimate NBA prospects at Kentucky on its roster that could have theoretically turned pro. Doesn't mean it would have been wise for Marcus Lee or Alex Poitras, but they could have done it and probably been picked somewhere. And yet, 6 of the 8 actually returned to school, including the 2 guards, which combined with the stacked front court suggests that, I don't know, this sounds crazy, but they're maybe, probably more talented than they were last year when they were the preseason number one team that ended up playing for a national championship. And this year they're going to have experience that should presumably allow them to miss some of the stumbling points that they had, I was going to say early last season, but really throughout last season until the postseason. Is there any rational, intelligent reason to say anybody other than Kentucky should be number one overall?
I don't think so. I mean, last year they did have some question marks going into the year, you know, point guard depth, experience. Now they don't really have any of those. You know, they have a ton of depth. Obviously, you mentioned they have experience. And it's kind of funny that they played well enough to, you know, a lot of the guys that could have gone pro played well enough to get to the national championship game, but not good enough to be a lock first-round pick. To me, it's insane that they played that well in March. And six of the eight guys, four of the six guys or six of the eight guys, whatever.
Return
to school. I just think that, obviously it's not Calipari's doing, but it's to me, I found it fascinating.
Man, you know, I really like Duke next year, but it's pretty much impossible. Here we are again with Kentucky. Watch Kentucky stumble next November too. Watch them lose two or three games.
Yeah, but they stumbled this past year and they made the title game.
Well, that's the interesting thing is now because of the way that run went down. Like even when they're stumbling, though, John Calipari will forever preach, "Hey, it's a process. It doesn't matter." Now he's got tangible proof of like, "Hey, you guys are flipping out. Why? You're the same people that flipped out last year. Look where we ended up. We'll be fine." In other words, I don't think they're going to stumble. I think they're going to be really strong from the start.
Yep.
I'm not predicting 40-0, and anybody who does is being silly. But I think they're more likely to go 40-0 with this roster than they were last year's roster. Given the depth,
they can play more different way, you know, different ways this year. They have, you know, Tyler Ulis and Devin Booker would have been starting guards. And now those guys are going to get, you know, 15 minutes a game. But they can play different ways. They can go, you know, against UConn, it would have helped if they could have gone maybe a little quicker or smaller in the backcourt. And now they're able to do that. They're able to go big, small, fast, slow. So I think that, you know, there's less of a chance they lose, whatever, 10, 11 games like they did this past.
I would say there's, like, I'm not going to say no chance. You get in trouble doing that. But I'd bet against it. I mean, they're going to be starting, you know, maybe only one freshman. And not because they don't have great freshmen. Just because they're going to have, you know, Willie Cauley-Stein is a junior who might actually come off the bench, but Dakari, sophomore, Harrison, sophomores, Poitras, a junior. They're really, it's an experienced, deep, and immensely talented roster. And now Calipari also has the credibility, like I said, to shut anybody up. Not that he's above trying to do it anyway in November, December, January, but any question that might come about, he can counter it with, "Are you the same people who were questioning us last year?"
And
it won't mean that it won't be fair to criticize or question if they stumble, but he's got a pretty heavy trump card to play.
Right, three Final Fours in 5 years there to date. This will be interesting from Kentucky's perspective of, I guess it'll be the most minutes Cal will have to spread around in theory. We'll see how the team blends, comes together, but you know, here are the names. You know, both Harrison's, Poitras, Dakari Johnson, Trey Lyles, a freshman, Cauley-Stein, Carl Towns, Marcus Lee, Tyler Willis, still going, Devin Booker, Dominique Hawkins, and Derek Willis. I'm guessing those last two won't see too much time, but we know Cal is obviously a master motivator in terms of getting guys. Man, it's such a cliche, but to truly buy in, because that's his hard sell. And I talked to a few guys at the Final Four with Kentucky in terms of that is, you know, he knows the job he has and the school it is. And so he can afford to say, "Don't come here unless you can handle the pressure and you realize that you're going to sit more than you're going to play." That's a strong possibility. So with that, with those players leading up to it, he should be able to balance it. But still, when you've got that much talent, when you've got at least eight guys that can make a pro, you know, a pro NBA check going forward, balancing all those minutes, I think will be the toughest challenge initially for those first 4 to 6 weeks.
It's going to be very difficult. And it's one of those, as odd as it is to say, you almost on some level hope for a sprained ankle early and a pulled hamstring somewhere else that sort of limits your options so that you're not, you know,
especially in the front court.
And that's what I mean.
There's so many guys.
You don't want Aaron Harrison pulling a hamstring, but
like
if any of those front court guys like were out for two or three games or 2 weeks, it's not a big deal, and you could actually twist it into a good thing because then you're not having to manage minutes in a more conventional way. Clearly, that is the biggest challenge for him. Is going to be trying to keep those front court guys happy because you're literally going to have a future first round pick buried on your bench somewhere. I mean, let's just go through it, okay? Even if you assume Alex Poitras can play the three, and for the sake of the conversation, let's just assume that he can. Then you've got, let's start it with Dakari Johnson and Trey Lyles up front, all right? So then you're going to go Oh, Willie Cauley-Stein coming off the bench, and who?
Carl Towns. Carl Towns, yeah.
Okay. So that means Marcus Lee is still buried, right? And that's a guy who had a phenomenal game in the NCAA tournament when given the opportunity to actual play. You got real issues if Poitras can't play the three, because then he goes back into that cluster of big men, and then you end up probably playing, I would assume, now you would recognize.
I guess the biggest tangible weakness is
you
the,
need Poitras at the three.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, yeah. Besides managing minutes, I think that, you know, James Young's replacement is going to be the biggest thing, yeah.
If they just decide at some point, whether it's November, December, January, that Alex Poitras can't play the three, he can't space the floor on offense, and he can't guard opponents' threes on defense. It's just not an ideal spot. You got him then thrown in with that cluster of bigs. What do you do then? Do you go Tyler Ulis with the Harrisons? Is that the best way to play Porzella?
You could do that, because the Harrisons are both, you know, really good scorers. You can go Devin Booker and have two just great shooters in Aaron Harris and Devin Booker on the court. But I think that if Poitras doesn't work out at the three, then I could see them losing a couple of games. But, you know, if he could just make a few shots, they could play zone defensively and cover him up on that end of the floor. But yeah, if he doesn't work out, then I think we're going to have to see some adjustments. And then the front court obviously gets more crowded, and we could see some, you know, chemistry issues there.
Yeah, well, the great thing is that even if you have to play, you know, a three-guard lineup, it's not a small lineup. I mean,
The guards are 6'5" across the board, yeah.
Right, I mean, Ulis is little, but the other guys, the Harrisons, are massive for their position. And so, Norlander, are you surprised that the Harrisons ultimately made this decision? I'll be honest with you. In the preseason, they were turning pro. As recently as March, I was told by somebody close to the family, they're turning pro no matter what. They clearly reconsidered that. Did it surprise you?
Did surprise me. I thought that they were certainly going to go. You knew that they would, you know, do the twin thing and make their decision jointly. So it was both go, both stay. Wouldn't be one either or. I think it's a smart decision, because obviously the space on the roster is there for them, because the backcourt that Kentucky has is still plenty loaded. But with them, they obviously are afforded the ability to come back, start, and up their stock and go in a draft in 2015 that will be weaker than 2014, which is just stacked up to be pretty remarkable, even with the guys that have opted to not enter and come back to college. So fairly surprised. I like Andrew more than Aaron overall. I think that that's kind of the consensus across the board. But I think this could actually prove to be a pretty big year for them overall, because with all the talent that's around them, I think they're going to have the ability to showcase both being facilitating guards, but also being, because they're both score first. I mean, neither's a true point guard. We're aware of that. So I think that they're actually going to help themselves. And whether it's bumping, you know, whether that means Aaron moves up from the mid-30s to the mid-20s and Andrew moves up from the mid-20s to the teens, it's still ultimately going to be a good decision. No guarantee that will happen. I think it's pretty likely with what Kentucky has this year and then going into next year's draft. So impressive move by them, because obviously, I mean, Parrish, you know, Borzella, you certainly know, for the past 3 or 4 years with these guys, when they've been known commodities, it was a foregone conclusion that they were going to be one and done. I mean, there was really no question about it until, you know, the final 2 weeks before the decision actually came down. So I love it, because it makes Kentucky deep, interesting, preseason number one again, and we're never short on storylines with them.
You know, I give credit to the dad here, and I know that he's been beat up a little bit, or at least mocked in certain social media settings. I mean, honestly, he was sitting right behind me at the national championship game just screaming like a lunatic, and so I was sort of having fun with that on Twitter. But once he came out and said, we are genuinely going to listen to what the NBA tells us, that's when I started to think that they were going to come back. And, you know, though it seems like an obvious thing to do, hey, if the NBA tells you you're borderline first-round picks at best, probably going in the second round, but you could come back, be preseason number one team, and go in the lottery next year, why not do that unless you're hurting for money? And if you're not, go back to school. Like, it seems like a very easy, simple decision. Once you've made your mind up, really, for more than a year, that you were only going to spend 1 year in college, it's very difficult to go back. It's like if you've made up, I don't know if you guys have ever been through this, but like, hey, we're going to move out of this house in the next 6 months. And then you come back and you go, well, maybe we'll stay here another year. It becomes very difficult, because you're like, you've already got your whole life planned out and you've made your mind up and you didn't plan to be here. And your instincts are to then just jump, whether it's proper or not. And so a lot of times I genuinely believe that guys turn pro when they shouldn't, somewhat because they had already decided that they were going to, like, you know.
Well, it's a pride thing, like, and then you tell people around you that you're right. going to be doing this, and so that's, it's kind of a thing where you gotta, you know, step back and kind of swallow some pride there.
Yeah, right. And so I actually give credit to the twins and to the father for being wise enough to recognize, hey, this now's not the time. Like, listen, this freshman year we had some ups and downs, but it ended well. Aaron became a legend, an icon of the NCAA yep. tournament, and Andrew played well down the stretch. But it's not, now's not the time. Let's come back, be sharp, get better from the start, try to be All-Americans, try to win a national championship, and then go. We're in no hurry. That's not an easy thing to do. Now, let me be clear. Had they turned pro, they'd be fine. They'd both be, you know, making more money than all of us combined this time next year. So it's not like they had to come back to school, but I do think it was the better decision, and I compliment them in all sincerity, with no sarcasm, for being able to reverse course the way they did.
And so now they'll be number one, sure. To almost everyone. I still give Duke a good chance at being the best team next year, partly because they're going to have the best player in college basketball. I think Jahlil Okafor's game is ridiculous. And I'm sure plenty of people listening are know the name and maybe even seen some of what he's done, because some of his games have actually been broadcast on television, as well as obviously the ability to see him on YouTube. But I think Duke is going to be really, really interesting, because I think Matt Jones will be really good next year. Tyus Jones is another incoming freshman who I love a lot. Suleiman, I kind of remain a fan of, even though I know he had his dog days somewhat last season. But to me, Duke is going to have the best player in college basketball. Not only are they going to have the best player, he's like a legit center. Like I honestly believe he has the opportunity to put up one of the 15 to 20 most impressive seasons since the mid 80s, basically. Like, I think he's that good. Borzello, do you agree? I mean, I think he's ridiculous.
You think he's going to be better than Jared Sellinger was or Kevin Love was?
Yes, I do.
Wow. Oh, wow. I mean, I don't think he's going to be one of the 15 best players since the mid 80s. I think that's a bit much. I mean, you were right. He's a back to the basket center, a classic center. I don't know if he's going to put up, you know, 20 and 10 right off the bat. I think he'll be the first pick in next year's draft. But I think there's other freshmen that will have better seasons. I think Cliff Alexander will have a better season than him next year. I just think he's better. Alexander's more ready to dominate at the college level than Okafor. I mean, I think Okafor's going to be great. I mean, I think he'll be, you know, one of the 5 or 10 best players in the country. I just don't know if he's going to be.
I love his,
you know,
I love his. He's got good passing ability, great feet.
Oh, he's
hands,
terrific. Yeah, he's awesome.
You could be right.
I like Okafor more than I like Alexander. I think Alexander's a bully.
I think he'll be able to bully his way in college too. I don't, at the NBA level, I like Okafor a lot better. I just think Alexander will be able to bully the Big 12.
He can bully. He can bully in college as well. But I think Okafor's got the goods. Like Okafor can he can work you. Whereas Alexander seems more like a bully to me. If I were picking who's going to have the better season, I think I would pick Okafor over Alexander. But it is interesting. And just to back up for a minute, you know, Norlander, you sort of prefaced everything by saying, I think Duke can be the best team in the country. Let's make sure we're clear about something. Just because Kentucky on paper should be the preseason number one, by definition, guarantees nothing. I mean, like, you know, Connecticut was never preseason number one or in season number five or, you know,
or pre-tournament number 20.
Right. And so, like, sometimes people get it twisted, like, somebody tweeted this at me, so we should just hand the trophy to Kentucky. No, that two totally different conversations. We're identifying who should be number one in the preseason based on what they're returning, what they're bringing in, what they've accomplished, so on and so forth. And then we'll play a season and we'll see how it goes. But on paper, it's Kentucky. By January, we could see it being Duke, Arizona. The more and more I look
Do you guys agree that there's a top five and then there's a drop off? Like, I think the top five is in some order. I think Kentucky's one, but I think in some order Arizona, Wisconsin, Duke, and Kansas should be 2 through 5. And then I think there's a drop off to like Florida, UNC, Texas, those schools. Would you agree there's a clear top five?
I don't know if it's a clear. I don't know, man. Like, Florida looks good to me. You know, like North Carolina. With Marcus Page coming back, looks good to me. Wichita State basically returning 4 major minutes guys, looks good to me. Texas returning everybody and possibly adding Miles Turner. I mean, there's always a drop off somewhere.
Right.
But I don't know if it's a clear divide between five and everybody else. Although I do agree that the five you identified, which is Kentucky, Duke, Arizona, Wisconsin, Kansas, should be one through five in some order. And like as I was doing this yesterday, and by the way, thank you to you guys for helping me get these rosters together and starting lineup together for the updated top 25 and one. I started looking at Wisconsin's roster again and wondering, like, there's not much depth there, but when you go starting lineup of Gossard, Jackson, Decker, Hayes, and Kaminsky, I mean, that's strong, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. really like I listen. I love Ben Brust. I'm not trying to say him leaving doesn't matter, but I mean, if Wisconsin was one of the best teams in the country last year, and all of these guys come back a year older, stronger, more skilled, whatever, it's hard to envision them not being really, really, really good.
I think they're going to be good. I think the key for a lot of people to remember is that Kaminsky had some big games, but he wasn't. It wasn't even that he was inconsistent. It's just that wasn't his role. Like, it was not his job to have 24 and 12 every night. So I think he'll still be able to do that, but I'm not sure. Like, I don't know if Kaminsky, even though he got tremendous draft stock, he had a big March, so obviously his profile gets upped even more. He set a school record last November by scoring 43 against a scrub team. But I don't know if Kaminsky's actually going to be good enough and have a good enough season to put up, you know, to be a first-team All-American. I think that is going to be an expectation because, honestly, his name's Frank Kaminsky. He is a tall white dude, plays for Wisconsin, and he had a great March. So people are kind of sure. expect that. I don't think that's realistic.
I think either him or Decker has to be that kind of player. And I don't know. I think Decker has more talent. He never really seems like that guy that who's going to go out there and try to dominate a game. And I think he's got to be that sort of player, that sort of assertive All-American caliber player for them to be a top three team. I agree. I think they should be two or three or whatever, but I just think one of those two guys has to really be a consistent All-American type player.
Listen, I wanted to talk about this later in the call, but since we are sort of just naturally ended up on this subject, All-Americans. Like, I was looking at it, preseason, all of that. It's not easy. I don't know that there is a consensus guy, unless you want to say it's Jahlil Okafor or maybe Montrezl Harrell. You know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know that there's a consensus guy. What, off the top of your head. Okay, so let's, you can go. Here's something I put together. You tell me what you think. Fred VanVleet, Marcus Paige, Emmanuel Mudiay, Montrezl Harrell, Jahlil Okafor.
Fred VanVleet is a first team All American. I'm trying to think of a guy that could replace him. And it's not.
I would say Paige.
Oh, you could replace him a variety of ways. Andrew Harrison, Kevin Pangos. You could move Marcus Paige to the point. Could be Ryan Boatwright. Could be Emmanuel Mudiay.
I don't think Boatwright will be there. Borzell is all on Mudiay. I don't know enough about his game to say.
Oh, I love Mudiay.
Do we give Arizona's Stanley Johnson a chance? Do you think he's an impact player that's good enough to crack a first team possibly?
I think he's going to be productive no matter what. But like, you look at Arizona and you look at what Aaron Gordon and like nobody on that starting five puts up huge numbers. Like they're all going to average between like 12 right. and 15 game. I don't know if anybody's going to put up the numbers necessary to be a first team All American. If I had to pick one guy from Arizona, it would be Stanley Johnson just because.
But
you know,
he might get canceled out by Rondé. Not that Rondé would be good enough to be a first team, but Rondé Hollis Jefferson might put up enough, and he's going to be a draft pick next year.
Like, there's just a lot of guys on that team I think are going to average like 14, 15 a game, something like that.
So, I mean, you could go, okay, so up front, like, I think Montrezl Harrell's the guy, but you could go, like, if I were going, you know, two bigs, you go Harrell and Okafor, or Kaminsky, or George Niang, Trey Lyles, Taron Pettaway.
Cliff Alexander's probably going to be in the conversation.
Cliff Alexander. Like, they're, like it's interesting. There's a bunch of guys, but I don't think – like, last year, if you know, everybody was going Marcus Smart. He has to be on everybody's preseason team. Who were the other guys that were just sort of – Russ Smith had to be on everybody's preseason team.
McDermott was
– like, there were three guys that basically had to – you had to start with three guys, and then we were arguing over Jabari Parker or – Mitch McGarry or Andrew Wiggins or whatever. But there were three constants for everybody. And yet,
even still, like, I feel like Wiggins and Parker were still like it was much less of a discussion. I was talking with Jeff Eisenberg about this last week, just the preseason All-American. But because, by the way, we're mentioning all these dudes. There's going to be one guy, if he doesn't even get first team, he'll flirt with it and be second team. Some guy we're not even talking about right now. And that's kind of the fun of college hoops is you just can't totally predict. Usually there's usually one surprise guy at least. And this year
I can
could be two to three or four.
I can totally predict everything.
Well, I know. I forgot who I was talking to here, but still, no, that'll, maybe we'll get some actual, like, some true variation from publication to publication come the fall in terms of, who gets preseason All-Americans. Yeah, I would probably put Page over Van Vliet if you wanted to stick to point guard specifically there. But man, I don't know.
Why couldn't you go Marcus Page, Aaron Harrison, Emmanuel Mudiay, Montrezl Harrell, Jahlil Okafor?
You could.
Yeah.
I know Goodman has Caris LeVert. I mean, I just had to throw that out there because I know he wants. I mean, I would put George Niang somewhere in the mix.
He's gonna
put up big numbers.
I've got him listed here. Yeah. You know, I had in the forward spots. I had Harrell, Kaminsky, Petaway, Lyles, Niang. Yeah. You know, like there's some good guys there.
Yeah, Harrell's gonna be interesting at Louisville. He was to me,
dude. He is awesome.
I was most shocked.
I guess he's awesome. Like, I don't know why he's coming back to school.
Yeah, right. I mean, he was so dominating, but we'll see how that backcourt helps him. I feel like a little bit of facility. Like, he is awesome. Don't get me wrong, and I love watching him play. But he'll be the guy next year for Louisville. And is the way that his game is assembled, is that going to help him truly flourish at a first team All American level to be the guy?
Yeah, I don't know. But is okay. So any other freshmen we need to like consider for this type of thing? Mudiay, Okafor, Alexander.
Maybe Tyus Jones, right. If you want to go that route.
Like Tyus Jones, we could look up in January and be talking about him the same way we talked about Tyler Ennis, you know?
Right. I think somebody from Kentucky is gonna emerge. Maybe Trey Lyles, but they could cancel each other out.
I think the bigs are gonna cancel each other out. Yeah, that's why, like, I was thinking Aaron Harrison. If as a freshman, Aaron Harrison put up like 15 a game or right around that,
right?
There's no reason to think that's gonna decrease. And so. Like, you know, if you are on the number one team in the country and you're the number one team in the country's leading scorer, that's probably first-team All-American stuff, right?
Yeah, and that's why I think you could put maybe Cliff Alexander, like I said, in the mix, because Kansas, to me, is going to be a top-five team, and I think he's going to lead the team in scoring. Or, you know, Kelly Oubre, another freshman, I think he's going to come in for Wiggins, and he's going to put up big numbers. And, you know, you just look at – there could be – I can make a case for 25 or 30 guys right now. To really, you know, you mentioned Pangos, you can go down the list. Stanley Johnson, we've already talked about. You know, even though we made fun of Goodman for Caris LeVert, I think he's going to average like 20 a game for Michigan next year. So I just think there's a lot of guys that we could talk about as at least a top, you know, three team All American.
Okay, so which teams, and Borzello and GP kind of hit both on this in different ways on the site, but. Which teams are going to be down the most next year due to either lack of incoming freshmen or because they lost guys early?
Oh, I think it's Michigan, right? I mean,
I think they're the number one team, right?
They could have been number one in the country. I mean, if you bring back – now, I they were always going to lose Stauskas, or at least always since January. So, but if you were to bring back, I mean, practically the whole team, you know that won the Big Ten, I think they could be a reasonable – challenger for number one in the country.
And given what Beilein always seems to do, he always seems to find a guy and that's going to average 15 a game and make threes and makes him, you know, gets the most out of his lineup. But they just lose a ton. They lose the three guys left early. And Jordan Morgan did a great job filling in for McGarren. He's gone. John Horford's gone. So they're, you know, they don't have a lot in the front court, and you know, they lose their biggest scores. It's going to be, you know, a lot of pressure is going to be on LeVert and Derek Walton and the newcomers.
Yeah, but if you brought back Walton, LeVert,
if you bring
McGarry,
everybody, that's
Stauskas, no, it's like maybe the number one team. Stauskas, Robinson, McGarry, Walton, and LeVert. I mean, that's like that. Those five make you, I think, one or two, no matter what.
Yeah, there's no way you were putting Michigan over Kentucky. But yes, no, I
UCLA could be in that mix too. They're
the other one, right? They're the other team that really takes a huge hit because they lose Jordan Adams at the last minute. I mean, Woj broke that at like midnight on Saturday. Kyle Anderson obviously gone, and then Zach LaVine is gone. Those are three guys gone to the draft specifically. Isaac Hamilton comes in, but that will be an interesting situation for Alford next year, because UCLA had a nice run. They got a 4 seed. They reached the Sweet 16 and fell to obviously number one overall seed in Florida. Now they're going to lose a lot of talent. So in year number two, I think Alford will have a big challenge. Getting that team to the tournament, I think, will be a victory. But I'm at least intrigued by UCLA because they were clearly going to be the number two team in the Pac-12, and now that's not the case.
I'm still sort of high on them. I still like them.
Are you a big Hamilton guy?
I like Hamilton. And they also bring in, you know, a lot of good front court players, three top 70-ish front court players that I think are going to make an impact. They bring back Norman Powell. They bring back Alfred Sun. So to me, they still have the pieces to make a tournament run.
I just think it's frustrating when – not that any of the guys made a bad decision. Like if Jordan Adams just decided he didn't want to be in school anymore and he wants to go make a money somewhere, then fine, whatever. But like – it must be frustrating when you're a coach. It's one thing to lose Julius Randle and James Young. Like, whatever. You, like, of course you are.
Or Kyle Anderson. Yeah.
But even Kyle Anderson is not guaranteed to be a lottery pick. I mean, I think he probably will be right around that. But, I mean, he could slip if, you know.
I just meant in the fact that he knew he was going to leave.
Sure. To lose a role player based on potential, you know, like Zach is frustrating probably. And then to lose Jordan Adams, like anytime you lose a guaranteed second round pick who is a great college player, like it.
Yeah, he would have put up 20 next year for the Bruins.
Yeah, he's a perfect example of a great college player who couldn't possibly be a first round pick. And so to lose a guy like that, same thing at Missouri, you know, losing Jabari Brown and Jordan Clarkson. I mean, those, you know, you losing second round picks is a killer for a basketball program. You can sort of plan or at least expect, get your mind around the idea of losing lottery picks, you know, like, and then be thankful or appreciative or fortunate if they happen to return to school like Montrezl Harrell. But losing second round picks is a killer, man.
Yeah.
That's a, you know what, GP, I've actually never heard anyone say it like that, but that's a damn good point because there's a certain reliability.
They're college stars and they're not guaranteed to get drafted. Like Nick Johnson, Arizona's well suited to, you know, make up for his loss, but he's not going to be a first round pick, and he was just dead set on leaving.
And I think he'll probably not be a first round pick, although I don't really get the hype with him, honestly. But like Syracuse losing a Jeremy Grant,
I think he's a mid first round pick.
Yeah, no, but personally, I gotta see it. I just never saw enough there to. And there's always a player like that where I just don't get it. But I'm saying Syracuse would have been hugely benefited by having Grant return. That's obviously not going to be the case, and they're going to be a team that really takes a huge step back. At least they should. I mean, Boeheim's had a pretty amazing run the past 5-6 years here with no matter the roster, and he's had plenty of talent. Obviously, they've put plenty of guys into the draft, but I think we are finally set up for a Syracuse season where even if they're going to run game in the non-conference, I think when they get to ACC play, they're gonna find themselves struggling to even be top four.
Run game. I like that.
Run game, that's right.
So the coaching carousel, it hasn't stopped, but it is significantly slowed, at least for now. When Missouri yesterday announced in the most top secret search in the history of searches, for whatever reason, like, get over yourself, or all crying out loud. Like, you're
GP might be speaking from experience of trying to break the story right now.
Well, it's just like, you know, I don't even mind, like, you know, sometimes sources don't talk. That's fine. This was one where, like, they were publicly misleading. Like, they publicly stated yesterday, we will not have an announcement after the board meeting conference call. And then 30 minutes later had an announcement. Like, why are you lying so much? Like, you know, what? Like, why do you take yourself so seriously? Like, you're Missouri basketball, for crying out loud. Like, anybody's going to care tomorrow or probably for at least another 2 or 3 years. And that's if you've made a good hire. But beyond that, okay. So
damn, GP.
Roasted.
So, you just went in on Missouri basketball.
Well, like, just, I don't know. I get frustrated by liars. I don't get frustrated by people who are, protecting themselves or their employee or you know, you're trying to conduct the search in private, whatever. Like, that's part of the game, right? You try to keep it from people like me, and people like me try to find out what's going on. But lying about it publicly, like when you're specifically asked, can we expect an announcement after the board meets on Monday afternoon, and they say no, there is going to be no announcement, there will be nothing nothing. And then by definition, if you announce something 30 minutes later, that means you were planning an announcement. Then you're just lying for the sake of lying, unless you can tell me the other reason you're lying, and I can't make sense of it. So like, it just seems all silly to me. But whatever. Like, again, they're going to be bad next year, and unless they've hired the best rookie 59-year-old Division I head coach in history, they're going to be bad for a while. So whatever. Like I care. Well, let's stick to this.
Yeah, you don't care. Don't worry.
What about hiring a 59-year-old with no Division I head coaching experience who hasn't been at the Division I level since the 90s? This makes sense to you?
No,
not really. No, it's not when a guy like Ben Howland's out there. who's proven he can win. And I know some people, you know, don't like him, but he's proven he can win. And, you know, he's had experience recruiting at the highest levels. And, you know, I know that Kim Anderson's got ties to the area and he coached the school, but to me, I mean, Howland would be more of a sure thing in terms of being successful than Kim Anderson is.
I mean, I got some thoughts, and I know GP will have his patented additional thoughts here. But yeah, so the Howland thing is interesting because clearly the way Howland's tenure ended at UCLA has stuck to him more than I think he would have expected, because he wanted Marquette. He didn't get Marquette. We thought that he would be at least a pretty strong candidate at any other major opening that happened this year. And that wasn't the case. So I am surprised right now where we sit that Ben Howland has not been hired at a D1.
Especially since you said, you know, you mentioned the way it ended, but you know, it ended with a Pac-12.
Yes, I know.
That's the thing. Like, and
yes, I know. But I'm saying, off the court suspicions of cheating. Okay, I'll blatantly put it out there. Just the way that happened and the way that he went out in that.
I got all that, and that's fair because there were whispers, whether it was validated or not, and it certainly there was never an
incident. Combined with the Sports Illustrated story,
but like, correct. Okay, but like, I just. That is one way to put it. Okay, first off, this is all interesting to me, and I'm actually going to write about this either today or tomorrow. I was on a radio show the afternoon that Michael White turned down Tennessee, but before it the job fell to Donnie Tindall, and it was in Nashville, and one of the hosts asked me about Ben Howland, and I said some stuff about Ben Howland, and he said, well, how much of a disadvantage is it, or how much of a negative is it the way his tenure ended at UCLA, essentially the same thing you just said in Orlando. And I said, well, what do you mean? And they were like, well, you know, he lost it a little bit. They went to 3 Final Fours, but, you know, it was slipping. He won the Pac-12 title in his last year. Like, right. He won the Pac-12. He beat Sean Miller, beat Dana Altman, beat everybody else. He won the Pac-12, all right? Well, so what's funny to me is that there were three knocks on Ben Howland as his UCLA tenure progressed. And the Final Fours were – at least in the rearview mirror, a little bit. The three knocks were this. One, he wasn't winning enough. Well, he won the Pac-12 title in his last year. So he at the very least, resolved that. And beyond that, this UCLA team that just went to the Sweet 16, basically his players. Okay, so B, it was, well, he's not recruiting well enough anymore. Can't recruit anymore. Except he signed a top five recruiting class in the country it was his last recruiting class. And I know that there were whispers around it. I'm not naive. Like, I hear the same things you hear. I've actually talked to Ben about it. But there was never anything of substance found. There was never an NCAA investigation that led to probation or sanctions or anything like that. And then the other knock was, well, he plays so slow, boring style. Except they were, you can go look it up, and I know you will, Norlander, at KenPom.com.
I'm aware of it. I'm not knocking him. I'm just saying how
top 25 tempo in the country. I believe it was second in the Pac-12 and top 25 in the country. So in his final year at UCLA, he won, he recruited, and he played fast. And yet UCLA still fired him because they had just made up their mind they were going to fire him. Now, to the point you made about, well, okay, so why can't he get a job now? Is it connected to whispers that he cheated? Well, are whispers that you cheated worse than proof that you did actually cheat? Because Bruce Pearl got a $2.2 million a year contract. So I can't imagine that that's actually it. Okay, so then there's the Sports Illustrated article, which, you know, clearly hurts because it shows up in Google searches. But what was really there? It looked to me like they recruited two bad kids that everybody else in the country was trying to recruit as well. And that Ben probably let them get away with some stuff that they shouldn't. Not probably. I won't be delicate with it. Definitely let them get away with some stuff they shouldn't have. Probably should have kicked both of them off. I'm talking about Reeves Nelson and Josh Smith earlier than he did. And then you had drug use within the program, which I don't want to say goes on at every program, but I think goes on in most college basketball programs as well as most college fraternities and law schools and everywhere else. And so I just think that's interesting that there's no question more people there's a segment of college basketball fans, and I think presidents, AD, I think Ben's got a perception problem right now. I don't think people perceive reality properly, and it has kept him listen, I can just tell you matter-of-factly, he wanted back in. I was on a radio show in St. Louis or Kansas City yesterday, and they said, well, what we're hearing is that Ben Howland, you know, didn't want the job. Absolutely not. He wanted the job. You know, he wanted the Tennessee job. He wanted the Marquette job. And I know he wanted the Missouri job. He wanted back in. And I think he might have overestimated what kind of job he could get. And by the time he realized, oh, wow, maybe I should have gone for Virginia Tech, it was too late.
Yeah. I would think by this time next year he will be hired because we'll have another whole batch. But I was just saying that I was surprised he did not get a gig at this point. I thought that it would have happened. And I was more speaking to the simple perception problem with Howland. So that's pretty surprising. A real quick thought on Kim Anderson, who most people have no idea who this guy is outside of Missouri fans because he's actually an alumnus there. I saw Seth Davis tweet it, maybe a couple other people, and I'm not saying they were legitimizing the apples to apples here, but they're bringing up Bo Ryan. Well, Bo Ryan was a lot younger and a lot more accomplished than Kim Anderson. Yes. So I don't quite get why we need to inject Bo Ryan's legacy and Kim Anderson being hired at Missouri. Not saying that Kim can't do good things there, but he's in a really rough spot here, and he's up there in age. The SEC is down, relatively speaking, but when you look at what else is going on in other programs there, when Tennessee gets a nice injection with Tindall, obviously Auburn with Bruce, we already know that the power programs are going to remain that way. It just, for Missouri fans who have suffered for so long and aren't inspired by this hire, I can't blame them for that, because right now it doesn't look like in the long term they're really in any sort of better situation than they were with Haith. And even I say that fully knowing that Haith was most definitely going to be out if he stayed one more year.
I hate it when these kind of comparisons come up, and they always do. First off, it's not apples to apples with Bo Ryan. It's apples to pears. Bo Ryan had been a Division I head coach before he got the Wisconsin job, right, at Milwaukee for a few years. And he had won at a more higher level. At a lower level than Kim Anderson has. Also, he was younger. Either way, let's pretend that it is apples to apples. He's like the only apple Brian is. So, like, it reminds me of, like, when people would look at a 5'11" scoring guard and go, of course he can make it in the NBA. Look at Allen Iverson. Well, there's one dude that did that, all right? Like, one dude. All right, like, or somebody would try to say, yeah, you can drop out of college. Look at Steve Jobs. Just because it has happened before doesn't mean it's likely to happen again, or even reasonably likely to happen again. So Kim Anderson might end up being a good hire. I wouldn't pretend to know. I don't know much about him. I've never covered Division II basketball. But saying it's going to work because look at what Bo Ryan did seems incredibly simple to me. And stupid. Simple and stupid.
No, I think we agree on that.
Okay, well, I've kept you long enough. Really do appreciate you, again, being here at CBSSports.com, listening to the podcast, the off-season podcast, reading what we write, interacting with us on Twitter. Remember, you can subscribe to the Iron College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. It's the quickest way to make sure you get the newest episode. So go ahead and do that. And I could usually promise you at the end of the call when we will be back. But when will we be back? Are we just going to do these sporadically whenever it feels like there's something to talk about?
Yeah, let's do them sporadically. Let's definitely do one sometime in like before July. We can do one in May if you want.
How about when Billy Donovan or Tom Izzo leave to go to the NBA?
Boom.
Oh God! Listen, I hope those guys do whatever they want to do and chase whatever they want to chase. But
you just started a whole other.
That's just a pain in our ass if that happens.
Oh, I'm just like, I would love it if it was really over. If like Southern Miss would make a hire and this would be just over. You know, we've got everybody in school. Like, it's just the idea.
Are you saying you're not gonna try to work the Maine and the Maine openings?
I am telling you.
Maine. Coppin State and Florida A&M openings.
I'm telling you definitively. If you guys want to chase Coppin State,
I'm about to break Florida A&M. I'm going to do it.
Hey, have at it, bro. It is all yours. So we will talk again relatively soon, and we'll be sure to let you know on Twitter. So make sure you're following us all on Twitter. We will give you 24-hour notice for the next podcast, and then we'll record it. And hopefully by then, my voice will be back to normal. Take care.